try to get you 15 minutes. Is that?
Well, I hope so.
Okay.
Start throwing rocks at me if I go over. Hi, my name is Mark Seifert. I work for the Ag Research Service in Boise, Idaho. I'm listed as the only author on here. That's because most of these slides and stuff are my fault, but of course, worked with a lot of different people to make them. The talk is about soil climate in the mountains. This is in this case in Idaho. Kind of follows up nicely on what we were just hearing. Of course, soil climate is important for a lot of reasons. I think we agree on that. Sometimes some people say it would be the most dominant of the five soil forming factors. Certainly, it's a first order control on all things biological, nutrient cycling, carbon dynamics, plant production, and affects many other things. And where we're looking at a lot of predictions of climate change, that means the atmospheric climate, the impact of that on the soil climate is particularly important. Big question. So where I'm working is in the Reynolds Creek Experimental Watershed. It's in southwestern Idaho here, kind of representative of this sort of intermountain, northern intermountain region. Looked like there were a few undefined regions, spots on the map we just saw. It's mountainous, so there's an elevation range of about, goes from about 1,000 meters to a little over 2,000 meters above sea level. These are some sites where we have long-term weather stations, and we also have long-term soil monitoring. And when I'm talking about soil climate here, I'm talking about soil water content and soil temperature. Our mean annual precip here is 230 millimeters a year. Mean annual temperature, about 9.3 degrees, about 9 degrees here with 260 millimeters, 330 millimeters of precip here, and temperature is about 8 degrees, and then here is 800 millimeters of precip and about 4 degrees mean annual temperature. At the top here, it's almost all of precip is snow. Here it's about half and half, or maybe a little more rain than snow, and here it's mostly rain. That's what it looks like. So at the very bottom, it's some people call it semi-desert, sagebrush, Wyoming sagebrush, and shad scale. A little further up, it looks a lot the same, Wyoming sagebrush. At the higher elevation site, there's a lot more grass, forbs, etc., low sagebrush, and at the top, still sagebrush, but this case it's mountain sagebrush, and it's the site's right in here, but you can see there's a lot more precipitation up there. What makes it
good? Click on that.
It
won't click forward?
No. When I click it, because, oh! Okay, so I want to describe a little bit the aspects that were some of the aspects of these temperature and moisture that we're seeing and how that affects how it's measured and interpreted. The lowest site that we had is the flats, and this is average temperatures that we've seen over the years. We've collected the data. The sites are vary a little bit, but in case of temperature, it's usually since about 1990, sometimes a little earlier. But one of the really striking features is that you have this regular progression of temperature. So here we have temperatures measured 10, 20, 30, 40, pretty close together. And it just, like in the summertime here, this is in July, you can start at and so these are monthly averages. You can start at 10 centimeters, 20, 30, and it just makes a progression down. Each depth is a little bit cooler, orderly progression. All the sites look like this. They have different temperatures, but they look just exactly like this. And then when the cool weather comes, the 10 centimeter cools the fastest, then the 20, then the 30, then the 40. So everything is very predictable and orderly. If one of your sensors is out, you can tell right away because it's not in line with all the other ones. And so it makes this very predictable. The other thing about this is that the long-term average for all these is the same. usually within about a tenth of a degree. So it really doesn't matter where you measure it. In the long run, you're going to get the same number on average. The other thing about this is that if you look down here, we have this. This is about 15 years of temperature data at Nancy Gulch, which was one of the lower sites. And so at 10, 60, and 120 centimeters, you see at 10 centimeters, if you just look at the max temperatures for the whole year, not a lot of change. Even at the minimum temperatures, we had a few years that they were cold, but not a lot of range. And then if you go to 60 or 120 centimeters, of course, you see this regular pattern every single year, year after year after year. Every year we've looked at exactly the same pattern. And the max and mins are actually quite close. So there's not a lot of variation in soil temperature from year to year. And that makes it possible to make a graph like this where we compare the different sites. Flats is the warmest, the low elevation, then Nancy Gulch, then Lower Sheep Creek, and then the coldest ones at Reynolds Mountain. And these error bars on these are pretty tight. One thing that's different here than many of the sites you probably look at is that in January, the temperature here is the same everywhere. Doesn't matter where you are in the watershed, it's the same temperature on average. If I showed you the 10-centimeter data, they'd all be at zero. It's because snow exerts basically a zero-degree boundary condition throughout the watershed most of the time. So everything is very close to zero in January. And then they take off from there. The reason Reynolds Mountain is a lot lower, one of the reasons is that snow melt isn't until April. And that's when the temperatures increase. So these are temperatures at 60 centimeters, which is close to what the soil taxonomy uses. We don't always have, some of our 50 centimeter sensors didn't work. And the combination here makes it pretty easy to characterize the mean annual temperature of the soils. If you have 2 years of data for any of our sites, you can say within about a degree what the mean annual temperature is. And if you have 5 years, you can tell within a half a degree. Now you can look at how that relates to air temperature, because that's how we usually figure out what the soil temperature is, by looking at the air temperature, because there's so much more data. And here are just two of the sites, but the graphs for all of them are similar. Average annual air temperature and average annual soil temperature. You can see there's certainly a correlation there. The R squared here is a bit exaggerated by this one cold year we had in both cases. But there's a lot of scatter there. There's not a direct, it's not, if you take this single point out, of course there's still correlation, but it's not that powerful of a correlation. And of course there are many things that affect that. Snow being a big one in our climate, but cover and water, the precip, etc. Now, for soil water is a really quite a different beast. For one thing, the soil water content doesn't have to be the same or different or more or less with depth, depending on your clay content, rock content, etc. You could have more water, less water, whatever, for every depth. Our long-term data goes back into the 1970s. We use a neutron probe for that data, so it's periodic. It's every 2 weeks on average. So these are data that were collected at Lower Sheep Creek, and which is next to the highest. Other data I'm going to present to you, what we've done is, since this is kind of a mess, we just present it in terms of the plant available water. So that makes things look a lot more straightforward. These are the different depths. So they're at 15, 30, 60, 90 centimeters. The 90 centimeter one rarely gets water. This is a dry climate. And then if you add all those up, you can get what we call a profile water content. In this case, it's to about 105 centimeters, a little over a meter. And that's the profile water content for these years, and that's how it varies at that site. So if you look at the profile water content over this 30-plus years, there are a few features here. One is you can see As you go up in elevation from the flats to the low, which is the lowest Reynolds Mountain, which is the highest elevation, certainly there's a trend for wetter. That goes along with the precipitation. But there's a huge amount of interannual variability. I think, you know, everybody, we have that at all the sites. And the other thing is that we have this dry summer. Mostly, when I do the classification of this, it usually comes out xeric, although it's very borderline for aridic at the bottom. But the very dry summer every year. So there's a regional climate stamp that goes on all the sites. And as a way, I think you can generalize across large areas. But of course, you have this large amount of interannual variability. This is what the averages are, just to kind of make this a little more clear. As you go up in elevation, it definitely gets wetter, and that's pretty clear. Just to look at this interannual variability again, this is one of the sites of flats. The dots are measured values since the mid-70s to 2008. And the green line is a simulation where we've tried to model the water content change over time. And it's pretty good agreement, but if you think of the green line as sort of a connector of the dots, not an imperfect connector, but you can see this huge amount of variability, interannual variability at the site. So some years, so there's at least a fourfold range in water contents, in maximum stored water contents at the site from year to year. And so if you want to characterize a site like this, you want to characterize just the profile soil water content within a centimeter, which is a pretty large chunk, it takes like 10 years of data. So it's not so easy to characterize water content. And then if you want to get to depth specific, like in the soil taxonomy, that's even tougher. And then, just out of curiosity, looking at how that correlates with climate. In this case, looking at precipitation. And so, in this case, we're doing it in a water year basis, which makes sense in our climate. So what you see is that there's a pretty good correlation between precipitation, the total precipitation, and the stored soil water. Not real great, but certainly they're correlated at the flats in Lower Sheep Creek and Nancy Gulch. At Reynolds Mountain, there's no correlation at all. In fact, I put this R-squared up here just because it was the lowest R-squared I'd ever seen, and I thought that was pretty amazing. But there's no relationship between precipitation and water content. It doesn't make any sense. It's not in a poorly drained area. Well, it makes sense if you consider that almost all the water that lands on there is snow, and most of the water that lands is snow in the winter. And there's always, every year that we've measured, there's always enough water there to completely fill the profile to a depth of a meter to field capacity. So every spring, this soil's wet in the sense of being at field capacity. What drives the changes in soil water storage is things like spring rainfall or fall rainfall, which really is a small fraction of the total, since most of the precip is in the winter, is in December, January, February, which just piles up on top and just runs, and most of which runs through. So anyway, that's a little bit surprising, but just to say, if you're in a snowy area, it's going to be a little difficult to use weather data to tell you your climate regime. So just sum up real quickly. Soil temperature and soil water content, very different beasts in terms of if you want to characterize them. The correlations with atmospheric climate, if you want, are there, but they're not dramatically strong. But I think that the soil climate, in addition to being a good link, an important variable describing soil processes, I think it's also a really important link to atmospheric processes and just tying soils into the overall larger global ecosystem. So I think it's an important variable to look at. Thanks.
Given that interannual correlation between the different educated communities and your data? Because that's been used a lot to make inferences about soil climate.
Absolutely. Vegetation and soil moisture are co-vary very closely. I could go on. In our place, there's these sites that we picked are sort of ridge, flat. They were chosen, in 1960 or something. Not that they aren't good sites, but they really just are elevation sites. But if you look on the watershed, there's forested areas, there's dry areas, there's south-facing slopes and north-facing slopes. Soil water content, profile water content. So, because depth of the soil is critical, and that's one of the big variables in how much plant available water there is. But if you look at variations in plant available water, they go with the vegetation very closely. Yep.
One more.
Oh.
I've never actually looked at these kind of data before. You said there's a reasonable correlation between the air temperature and the soil temperature.
Uh-huh.
Well, it should be, because it's just a pure physical... it's just the relationship is the thermal diffusivity of the soil, which is the quotient of the heat capacity and the thermal conductivity. Do you actually estimate those quantities from the data, which is the real... physics behind this? Because they're the soil physical properties that actually give you that relationship.
Right. First of all, that's not true. For example, with snow insulating, that has a huge impact on the interchange between the atmosphere and the soil. And of course, any cover, whether it's vegetative or organic matter or whatever, has a huge impact on the exchange of air of temperature within the profile. And then, if you look at these profiles, especially, there's an easy way to estimate those parameters looking at the kind of sine wave analysis that a lot of people have done. And you can get very, there are lots of ways to estimate those properties, and we can simulate temperature very well on an hourly basis at all these sites. You can do a very good guess on it.
Yeah, so
it's very excellent. Yeah, it's pretty easy to simulate the temperatures, actually.
Right.
Compared to moisture, anyway.
Yeah. And the reason why you're not getting a 100% correlation is because of the varying moisture content. That's what's affecting the diffusivity, I guess. When you're getting all that variation in moisture,
That has something to do with it. But if you look at the interannual variability of soil temperature, it's very small. The interannual variability of moisture is huge. So there's other things going on there. But
I think we're going to close, Mark.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to. Okay.